I'm sure I just totally confused our altar servers. It's always a little odd to be a guest in a place where they actually know what's going on and I don't. When I was young, I used to love to play Monopoly with my sisters and brothers. I have 8 siblings, so let me just say that these games, they were epic. And though sometimes I found the negotiations and the deal makings a bit tedious and frustrating, I especially remember the experience of having 2 out of the 3 possible parts of a Monopoly. I'd have Illinois and Kentucky, or New York and Tennessee, and I only needed St. James Place or Indiana to fill it out. And I would invariably have to go to my brother Alex, and I would have to ask him something like this: "Well, Alex, how much do you want for St. James Place?" To which he would never reply with a definite number. His reply was always, always the same: "Well, how much do you have?" Ooh, I hated that answer, because it meant that in order to get what I really wanted, all I thought that I really needed, I had to give up everything else that I was holding. I had to let go of some big part of my security or some big part of the treasure that I had built up. And as much as I wish things were different, the question was never, "Well, Joseph, how much can you pay?" Nor was it ever a request for some definite amount. It was always that damnable question: "How much do you have?" Today, as we move into this first Sunday of Lent, I recall those games with my siblings, and I recognize that throughout my life, my brother's question has also been the question that God has asked me so many times. Indeed, it is, I think, the question asked of each of us at each stage of our lives, at each throw of the dice. How much do you have? What are you willing to pay for what you desire the most? What are you willing to sacrifice to find what is missing, to find the wholeness for which you have so longed? Are you willing to go to the desert, to go where you may face struggle and temptations? Because in the wilderness, Satan was tempting Jesus to take care of his own needs, to provide his own food miraculously, because he was hungry rather than allowing God to supply Christ's needs in God's own time, in God's own way. Satan was tempting Christ to doubt his Father's sufficiency, just like Adam and the Israelites before had doubted God's sufficiency. And when Satan tempts him to go through himself and throw himself down, he was seeking to disqualify Jesus as the Messiah. Had Christ put God to the test, Satan was seeking to put doubt and unbelief in the mind of Jesus. If he had jumped, he would reveal that he doubted God and thus found it necessary to test God's love and God's care. It is often in times, I think, of adversity that our tendency to put God to the test becomes so evident. We place conditions on God, things that he must do for us to acknowledge that he is present. We forget God's promise of absolutely unending fidelity, a love pact pledged to Noah and so many who have come before us, a love pact that is sealed with the very gift of creation and the curve of a bow. And finally, darkness was tempting Christ to save the world in an easier, far less humiliating way than death on a cross. "I will give you all of this," Satan says. And there it is, It's the quickest fix. If Jesus would just bow down and worship him, he would not have to go through the severe humiliation, the beatings, the blood loss, the crown of thorns, being nailed to the cross or suffering as a common criminal, being ridiculed and abused, suffering derision and mockery. Jesus would not have to die if he would just worship darkness. Jesus is assaulted by the temptation and seduction of darkness, who proposes a different messianic path for him. This alternative Messiah becomes then a Messiah of power, of domination, not one of self-offering love. Jesus went into the desert, led by the Spirit, to face precisely the question, what does God want from me? Only to hear the answer again and again, how much do you have? Christ was driven into the desert to face squarely that question, for the truth is that God wants it all. And when we think we have given all, it seems that God calls forth a little bit more, but we resist and we hesitate. We find ourselves too weak or too scared to really give to God all that we have. And in these 40 days, we are called to fasting and to prayer, to almsgiving, and to all the rituals that train us and strengthen us, that help strip away our treasures and our protections, those things we so deeply and fearfully believe we cannot do without. In other words, those things that we are surely called to give up. But we focus so much on the temptations in the desert, I think sometimes we miss that first line in this gospel reading, that it was the Spirit that led Jesus there. The Spirit drew Jesus into the desert, not to rest, but so that he might discover in himself the power of grace, the fruit of his baptism, and the love of God that poured out into him. Because it says in that very first line that Jesus filled with the Spirit. Well, that Spirit that he was just filled with was because he had just arisen from his baptism. That God had poured out upon him the graces that he would need as he rose from the water. The Spirit leads Jesus so that, renewed and blessed, he might face squarely this power of darkness. And similarly, our journey into Lent, if we wish to go with Christ, is not a vacation or an escape from the world. Rather, it is a pilgrimage into the simple and spare landscape of the truth, into the wild expanse of our own hearts. My friends, Lent is not supposed to be sort of a spa on the outskirts of Scottsdale where we can hide. No, it's an encounter in the wilderness where the God who loves us summons us to a kind of purifying fire with unfathomable mercy. It is a journey that will tempt us to easy solutions and lonely power. A journey that we begin smeared with the ashes of our own mortality. But the ashes in the sign of a cross, the sign of our salvation. For each of us chooses to make this pilgrimage on her or his own. And we do so always at the side of the one who has gone before us into that desert. Because Lent offers an alternative to the noise of this world. Not by escaping the world, but precisely by entering straight into it. A summons to listen with hearts open and fearless to the love spoken to us at our baptism. This, you, each and every one of you, each and every one of us, are God's beloved, in whom God is well pleased, and leads us into the desert to encounter that truth. Christ goes before us to encounter the darkness. We are led into the desert so that we might encounter the grace that Christ was filled with, the spirit that Christ was filled with, knowing that he and we are God's beloved. Lent asks us to fast. Not that so we can lose a few pounds, nor because we have some kind of punishment, but so that we can see the freedom that we have in the depths of our souls. Because Lent is about conditioning ourselves for the real sacrifices and the real alms that at some point give the sense of power and safety that we have in our wealth or our weapons or our prestige or our privilege. The foolish notion that we are in control and that our resources in the desert will somehow be enough, where the question that will be asked of us again and again will be, how much do you have? We are asked that over and over. How much do you have? Throughout this novena, we have been praying with these vow crosses. In many religious traditions, when a sister or a brother or a priest profess their vows, they receive a cross similar to this. I want you to imagine, if you will, you can look up at the crucifix behind me, holding this vow cross like this, so that you can see the corpus between your thumbs, holding it just like that. Many years ago, almost 20 years ago, I was teaching at Fordham University and studying philosophy at the same time. And let me tell you, it was a very dark time. It was a desert time. I had packed everything up. I was done. I was absolutely done. And in a spirit of transparency to my brothers, I had arranged that I would leave at 5 a.m. so nobody would see me. Yeah, some kind of transparency, right? I had called the cab. I knew I had gotten a ticket. Everything was ready to go. And I found myself having trouble packing up my vow cross. So there it sat. And I went to bed and I was all ready to go in the morning. And I picked it up and was praying with my vow cross that this was the right decision, that I was no longer going to stay in the Jesuits. And as I looked down, holding this vow cross, I realized at that moment that I was, as if unconsciously, trying to hold up the corpus of Jesus with my thumbs pushing up under those arms, as if I was going to relieve somehow the sufferings that Christ had offered out of love for me. And in my own hubris, that I was going to somehow relieve the sufferings of Christ. And I was somehow still in charge. Somehow still holding on that it was going to be how I wanted it, rather than to accept the wide-armed embrace of love that came from the cross. How many times have we entered into Lent and we are absolutely convicted of what is it that we are going to do? And we go into the desert
as if we are going to face these great temptations. My friends, if we do that, then we have placed ourselves ahead of Christ. He has already gone there before us precisely to face those temptations. We go not out into the desert alone. We go into this desert with the one who has already gone there ahead of us. If we go into Lent looking for darkness and looking for temptations, oh yes, we'll find them. More precisely, they will have found us long before we find them. We go into the desert because we go into that place where Christ has already been. We go with Christ leading us. We go with the Spirit. We go not seeking out temptations. No, we go seeking out the very grace that Jesus received at the beginning of the gospel that we hear today, filled with the Spirit that said, "You are my beloved." That is why we go into the desert, so that we might find that voice. We don't go looking for temptation. We don't go looking for darkness. We go looking for the one who calls us beloved. The one who looks at us, and when we are asked that question, how does God look at us? God looks at us with infinite compassion and love. And what does God want from us? More than we could possibly hope for or imagine. We go into the desert and we are faced with the question, how much do you have? How much do you have? Because what God wants to offer us is more than we could possibly hope for or imagine.